Today is Friday, September 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Hurricane Dorian is now pummeling parts of the southeastern U.S. East Coast.
The center has drawn closer and closer to the shoreline, and while it's offshore and the eyewall is offshore, it's close enough that winds to hurricane force have been reported.
Iran informs the UN it will start expanding its nuclear research and development. Also ahead, a highly successful young rapper says she is retiring. It's all on today's International Edition. Hurricane Dorian soaked the Carolinas Thursday, flooding coastal towns, downing trees, and whipping up occasional tornadoes a couple of days after reducing parts of the Bahamas to rubble. Life-threatening storm surges and dangerous winds remained a threat for much of the coast of North Carolina and Virginia. The center of the hurricane was forecast to move near or over the coast of North Carolina. National Hurricane Center Deputy Director Ed Rappaport says they are expecting a powerful hurricane to make landfall later today along North Carolina's Outer Banks.
The conditions are going to deteriorate over southeastern North Carolina and be at their worst during the day. Again, winds potentially going over 100 miles per hour, a storm surge of 4 to 7 feet, and rainfall of as much as 15 inches. All preparations should now be complete along the coast of South Carolina and North Carolina.
Rappaport says Dorian is expected later today along the Outer Banks.
In the next 12 to 24 hours, with winds possibly gusting over 100 miles per hour and with a storm surge potentially rising to 4 to 7 feet.
Life-threatening surges, dangerous winds still remain a threat. Governors in the region declared states of emergency, closed schools, opened shelters, readied National Guard troops, and implored residents to take the warning seriously. Many of those people are doing just that after seeing that Dorian left parts of the Bahamas underwater and in total ruin. First responders and disaster relief organizations have mobilized to the Bahamas to deliver aid and assist in search and rescue operations, where at least 21 deaths have been recorded and thousands are injured or homeless. VOA's Arash Arbasadi spoke with relief personnel and has that part of the story.
Water draining from the northernmost island of Grand Bahama reveals communities in ruin.
Much of Grand Bahama was previously underwater, but Grand Bahama is now cleared. Some homes, businesses, and other buildings and infrastructure were badly damaged.
Hurricane Dorian, one of the most powerful storms recorded, was the strongest ever to hit the Bahamas. It lingered for 2 days atop the island nation. Buildings flattened, vehicles tossed, highways ripped apart.
Now that the storm has passed, we're beginning to carry out our damage assessments and to see exactly logistically how we're looking.
From the ground in another badly hit area in the Abaco Islands, entire neighborhoods torn to pieces, a sign that a humanitarian crisis is looming.
The people just can't wait. When you've lost everything, you need food, you just can't sit around and wait for it.
Major Clarence Ingram works for the Salvation Army in the Bahamas. Much like the Red Cross, they bring immediate relief like food, water, and medicine.
We will try to hire some local people to help with the relief effort because it puts money in their pocket, helps them to continue to survive and not only to have a little bit of food, but to be able to get some things together to begin to put their lives back together.
Thursday in New York, a United Nations spokeswoman said the World Food Program is organizing an airlift of things like generators and satellite equipment, plus 8 tons of ready-to-eat meals to help the tens of thousands now in need.
This afternoon, I spoke with President Donald Trump, who has expressed the support of and pledged the assistance of the United States of America for the Bahamas in our time of need.
The United States Coast Guard so far has rescued more than 100 people and several pets. Arash Arbasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. President Trump creates a storm of his own with repeated claims of the hurricane threat to Alabama. A U.S. envoy for Israeli-Palestinian talks will be leaving the White House. The U.S.-backed Syrian forces hand over three children of ISIS fighters to Nigeria. And activists see European shortfalls in battling domestic violence. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Iran said Friday it had taken a step to further downgrade its commitments to a 2015 nuclear deal with the world's most powerful nations in retaliation for U.S. sanctions reimposed on Tehran. President Donald Trump pulled the United States out of a nuclear deal last year, arguing it didn't go far enough, and reimposed the sanctions that have slashed Iran's crude oil sales by more than 80%. Joining us now to talk about the latest developments is Ramesh Thakur, Emeritus Professor at the Australian National University's Crawford School of Public Policy. Thank you for being with us. Tell us a little bit about your reaction to the latest developments.
Well, it's quite significant. A series of graduated or calibrated signals and messages they have sent, as well as going back on elements of the deal. If we go back to the deal, there were two pathways to the bomb, the separated plutonium and the enriched uranium. The plutonium pathway so far remains closed. The uranium pathway, there are three elements to that, and steadily Iran is saying one by one, we are now unpeeling each of the three elements. One is stockpile of enriched uranium. Second is centrifuges with respect to both quality and numbers. And the third is the purity of the enrichment. On the last one, we know that they had reached almost 20% enrichment before the deal. Now, that's misleading, as I've explained earlier, because that 20% enrichment, you've actually done more than 90% of the work needed to get to weapon grade, which is at 90%. So these percentages are misleading for that reason, because already at 5%, you've done 80% of the work to get there. So they're going to increase the quality of enrichment, they've said, with centrifuges, with a new generation centrifuges, and more of them. They can spin more of the uranium in its natural form in order to get enrichment faster and more of it. And then the third element, they will also get increased stockpile. Remember, they had approximately 10,000 kilograms at the time of the deal. That was cut back by 98% to 300 kilograms, and the purity was reduced to 3.67%. Now, I believe, not being a physicist, but I believe from talking to them, that at that level of enrichment, you'd need about 1,000 kilograms to be able to make one bomb. Mm. So 300 would not allow them to do that. Whereas at the other end of the scale, at fully enriched 90%, you only need about 25 kilograms to make one bomb. Effectively, to put it in simple terms, we thought that they were within 2 to 3 weeks breakout time, the distance between deciding to get the bomb and actually being able to get it based on your stockpile, your enrichment quality, and the centrifuges. With the deal, that breakout time got extended to 12 to 15 months. Now they seem to be inching back towards shortening and cutting the breakout time should they decide to go down that route.
Why do you think that they are taking such dramatic steps at this point?
Well, both to make a point, but also precautionary. I mean, no one can be certain that there will not be another military clash or skirmish. Where will it lead to? We've just had a new report in the New York Times magazine that around 2012, Israel was on the verge of actually launching a military strike, and the Obama administration was monitoring that and looking at what they might need to do to contain it. As they say, you know, even the paranoid do have enemies, and I think Iran is justified in feeling that it could find itself under military attack. And while it cannot stop that, and I don't think it's in a position way into the foreseeable future to defeat the United States, what it can do is raise the costs of any military strike, whoever the attacker is. And that's what they're trying to do, so that it's not worth it from a potential attacker's point of view to initiate military hostilities.
Do you think that this could have been avoided had the United States stayed in the JCPOA, the nuclear deal?
It was working. There was no need for this. All the rise in tensions dates back to the decision by the Trump administration to walk away from the JCPOA. Until then, effectively, we had achieved the two bottom line goals, we meaning the international community. One was no bomb for Iran, because we pushed that out by 10 to 15 years at a minimum and gave ourselves time to work to even extend it further. And the second was no bombing of Iran, and that was also achieved. Both those are now under question, and it has to be said that that's because of the United States' unilateral decision to walk away from this international deal.
Right. The president said it was a terrible deal, that it wasn't working.
It was not a perfect deal, but it was a good deal and it was working. And the president's decision turned out to be a terrible decision.
What if he were to say now that this just proves he was right?
That's like someone killing his parents and then appealing to the court for mercy on the grounds he's an orphan. It wasn't a perfect deal, but no one said it was. It was good enough in terms of the two core objectives. And walking away from that in the search for perfection, on the one side, he's not a step nearer to getting a perfect deal. On the other side, he has increased tensions and the potential for actual conflict. It doesn't add up.
Right. I think the Europeans were keen on improving on the deal that was already in place. And now there was even a last-ditch effort by the French, a proposal offering $15 billion in credit to compensate Iran for not being able to sell its crude oil because of U.S. sanctions. That seems increasingly unlikely. How would that have worked and why didn't it work?
Quid pro quo for Iran was sanctions relief, and then gradually increasing to full sanctions relief. They haven't got that, so why should they stay in the deal? You can't make one party stay in the deal while you walk away from it. It just doesn't work like that, and the rest of the world doesn't see it working like that.
All right, we will continue our interview with Ramesh Thakur, Emeritus Professor at the Australian National University, in just a minute. We'll be right back.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
And now part two of our interview with Professor Ramesh Thakur on Iran's announcement that it is ramping up its nuclear development. If President Trump does not get reelected and a new president comes in wanting to salvage the deal or get back in the deal or improve on it, would the United States still have any credibility and trust in doing so?
Of course it would. If you have a new administration and says that was a mistake, we'll restore the status quo ante, we'll go back to the original deal and work on the additional problems in regard to Iran's regional behavior in fomenting instability. We want to look at Iran's missile program, etc. Then you can proceed on that basis. You can, of course, restore things back to where they were. The problem there might be that we know that there were always this division of opinion even inside Iran. The hardliners were always suspicious of good faith on the part of the United States. They don't trust the United States. They think it's drinking from a poison chalice. And they've felt vindicated. So will they permit a second effort at that, including the Ayatollahs? And we are not sure that they would from their point of view. This has not been a surprise, and they've always said you can't trust the Americans. I think the thing that has happened since the Trump decision to walk away from the JCPOA is that the other regions and the international security environment has actually gotten worse, and therefore the Americans have more reason to regret having walked away from the JCPOA. We've had the INF collapse. There's still no sign that New START will be extended. The Russians have got into the nuclear arms race game, and the essentially geopolitical dispute in the guise of a trade dispute, which China has also become worse. So all in all, suddenly the Americans find themselves dealing with several fires all over the world, and they could have done without this in the Middle East.
How concerned are you that this could just be disastrous for the world?
We are very concerned. I take part in an annual event called the Hiroshima Roundtable, which is convened by the governor of Hiroshima, and it's held every August. I've just come back from that. And as a group, and this is a multinational group, including some Americans and Russians and Chinese, and a couple of us from Australia, for the first time we issued what we call a Hiroshima Urgent Appeal. And that drew attention to four pacts. One was the INF, which lapsed on last month. The second is New START, which there's no sign of renewing, and it lapses in 2021. The third is the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. And we've said that all this points to the collapse of the entire architecture of the global nuclear order, and possibly a collapse of the NPT itself when it convenes for its review conference next year. And that would be very damaging development in terms of the international security environment and risk a nuclear arms race with increased probability of a nuclear war. So we do need to take urgent action to protect, preserve, defend, extend, and in fact deepen treaty-based global multilateral regimes. And walking away from these has worsened international security, not contributed in positive way to at all. The Iran deal was one of the very few positive events and developments we've had in the nuclear field in the past decade.
All right, that's Ramesh Thakur, Emeritus Professor at the Australian National University's Crawford School of Public Policy. Thank you for being with us. Nearly 3 months of protests have rocked Hong Kong amid a harsh police crackdown, widespread arrests, and fears of suppression by Beijing. On Wednesday, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam announced plans to withdraw a controversial extradition bill that sparked the unrest, but pro-democracy activists are pressing for more. Mike O'Sullivan reports on how the current demonstrations are the latest in a long history of protest in the Chinese semi-autonomous region.
Blockages at the airport, clashes on the streets, and peaceful marches that have mobilized millions. Experts say Hong Kong's unrest has multiple causes beyond the now withdrawn extradition bill that sparked the protests.
The broader anxiety over Beijing's interference in the governance of Hong Kong that is driving this protest movement. And then the second thing is this very fact that the government is leaving the police to try and treat as a law and order issue what is essentially a political issue.
He says authorities have not addressed the underlying issues behind the umbrella movement protests of 2014 or earlier protests over human rights and governance. This longtime resident of Hong Kong and corporate lawyer has chronicled the story of the former British colony, starting with a 1966 protest over a hike in ferry fares.
And that single protest led to a very broad movement, rioting, protests against government policies, and that then fed into further riots in 1967 during the Cultural Revolution.
That action led to changes in social welfare benefits and labor law. The 1997 handover to Beijing guaranteed continued human rights under one country, two systems. But frustration with Beijing's interference has simmered and led to a kind of direct democracy.
We are not talking about some kind of representative democracy. In fact, we are practicing some kind of what we call the participatory democracy. Everyone is participating. Everyone has something to contribute.
This year's protests have differed from others in the past in that participants have embraced it as a leaderless movement. Another local analyst says the situation reflects how protesters are a permanent part of Hong Kong's political landscape.
Anytime there's a major issue and then we come out to protest. So you can control them perhaps for a few months, perhaps even for a year. After some rest, if any other major issue arises in the future, they would, all of a sudden, they would, I mean, like another volcano eruption.
Professor Lo says such ongoing protests are something Beijing, which allows no public dissent in mainland China, may have to come to terms with. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Well, Ghana is famous for its cocoa, the main ingredient in chocolate. It supplies about 20% of the world's markets. This year, the government announced plans to raise cocoa incomes, but cocoa bean farms are being destroyed with or without the farmers' consent as their landlords end their leases early, opting for other crops, development, or mining. Stacy Knott reports for VOA from the eastern region of Ghana.
Farmer Ama Sewa walked through land which once held her farm that supported her children and grandchildren. She had leased the land, growing cocoa and other crops. This month, a bulldozer cleared the land, and with that, Sewa and her family's livelihood. Farmers believe the land was cleared to make way for a cattle farm. In Asikesu, a cocoa-growing region of Ghana, hectares of cocoa trees, like Sewa's, have been destroyed. Farmers like Sewa have toiled for years growing their crops on land they do not own or have much control over. Sewa says the compensation she received was not enough, and now she does not know how she will feed her family. Another farmer, David Servor, also surveys what was once his land. He has been told to leave his home. Profits from his 1 hectare farm helped pay his children's school fees.
About 2 weeks now, I've not slept before. Thinking, because all what I've done in my lifetime has gone forever. And it's like I'm alive, but I'm dead.
Ghana's cocoa industry is regulated by a government body that sets the price the growers earn from their beans. Earlier this year, Ghana added a $400 living income differential fee per ton of cocoa beans sold on the market, with the aim of improving livelihoods for farmers. The president of the Concerned Farmers Association, Nana Obwadi Obampua Boateng Bonsu, says ensuring a sustainable future for Ghana's cocoa farmers means protecting the crop on which they rely.
This is a serious challenge, and it's something that we have been fighting for so long, but then it seems government has put in wax in its ears because government is not all that serious about this cocoa issue.
Farmers losing their land is a major problem, Ghana's cocoa regulator says, and often the ownership structure of land is the issue, where farmers lease land from chiefs who later take it back when enticed by other developments. While the regulatory agency works with chiefs to combat the practice, it does not have the right to tell landowners what to do with their property. Officials say it offers legal representation to farmers to address compensation rates. Stacey Knott reporting for VOA News, Esikesu, Ghana.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence expressed the U.S. administration's support for British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and Britain's exit from the European Union while speaking in London. Slatika Hoke reports.
The U.S. Vice President's visit to Britain comes at a time when the country's newly elected Prime Minister faces desertion from his own party members, angered by his determination to take the country out of the 28-nation bloc by October 31st, whether the two sides reach a deal or not. A so-called no-deal Brexit would require re-establishing a land border between Ireland, which is an EU member, and Northern Ireland, which is part of Britain. Opponents say the border is expected to create major obstacles for businessmen and traders on the British side of the border. But Johnson says the benefits of Brexit would be worth it. Pence conveyed that the U.S. administration's staunch support for Johnson.
We honestly believe that the United Kingdom is on the verge of what your new Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, called a new golden age. A new era in which our two nations will stand side by side, shoulder to shoulder, and we will show the world how free and fair trade can promote prosperity and peace across the globe.
Pence said the United States is ready to do a free trade agreement with Britain immediately upon the completion of Brexit.
We believe a free trade agreement between the United States and the United Kingdom could increase trade between our two countries 3 or 4 times.
Johnson wants to suspend Parliament and hold snap elections to secure the completion of Brexit by the end of October. But on Wednesday, his own Conservative Party members helped defeat his plan to hold an early election, and Johnson expelled 21 of prominent party members. To add to his troubles, Johnson's younger brother Joe announced that he will step down as a Parliament member. The embattled Prime Minister accused Parliament on Thursday of prolonging the country's incarceration in the EU.
It costs £1 billion a month. It achieves absolutely nothing. What on earth is the point of a further delay? I think it's totally pointless.
The opposition Labour Party is seeking to benefit from the current political crisis and bring to an end the 9-year-long Conservative Party rule. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
The lyric
Next could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
VOA's International Edition continues. The chart-topping rapper Nicki Minaj says she is retiring. She announced it Thursday on Twitter that she has decided to retire and have a family. Her announcement comes as a surprise after she recently made a guest appearance on Megan Thee Stallion's Hot Girl Summer show. In the tweet, Minaj took a jab at her critics and asked her fans to, quote, keep repping me, do it till the death of me. In July, Minaj announced she was pulling out of a show in Saudi Arabia to support women's rights, gay rights, and freedom of expression. She also canceled her appearance at the BET Experience concert earlier this year. Last year, Minaj released her fourth album, Megatron. And you have been listening to International Edition. That's going to do it for our show today, but we thank you so much for taking the time to join us, and thank you to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London!
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
This is VOA News. I'm